Thanks for coming.
Just turn that down to 10.
Put mine to sleep, huh?
Yeah.
For those that are listening to these from a remote location, like downloading this podcast through iTunes or getting them from the ISKCON Desire Tree website in Bombay, you're welcome to give us your feedback. My email is at utahkrishnas@gmail.com. We also have a membership on our website at utahkrishnas.org, and we'd like to thank all those who are members, because we couldn't do what we do without your inspirational help. Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Today's title is Lacking Nothing. Too often we focus on what we don't have, how big our obstacles are, how little skill we have, how we don't have enough financial or other resources or the right connections in order to accomplish what we want. I have a dream, but I don't have the resources. Here's what I've learned. Everything that you need to accomplish, everything that you're meant to accomplish, is within your reach. Something very, very close to you, something that you might have overlooked. Prabhupada gives the example of the iron rod. It's a very ordinary thing, iron rod. But when you place it in fire and you leave it in the fire long enough, it becomes red hot. You take it out of the fire and it acts just like fire itself. Ordinary things, if they're blessed and anointed by God, can take on extraordinary significance and extraordinary powers. Sometimes we're looking far away in the sweet by and by, and we forget to look at what's right close at hand. If you'll do the ordinary, Krishna, which is our name for God, He'll do the extraordinary. If you'll do the natural, then He'll do the supernatural. So ask yourself this question: could it be that I have the people that I need right at hand in my circle? Could it be that I have the opportunity right nearby? Could it be that I have the answer to that problem that's been bothering me for some time? We're looking for something that's going to give us goosebumps. We're going to look for that, you know, flash of light on the road to Damascus, you know, flowers showering from above and kettle drums. Try looking a little closer at home. Try being a little bit more in the present than in the la-la land, in the sweet by and by. And you'll advance your destiny much further than you would otherwise. We read in the Bible about Samson. He was just wearing a loincloth and 1,000 strong opponents came at him. He had nothing to defend himself, no sword, no shield. He looked around and he saw a jawbone of an ass. Nothing more ordinary than that. And yet God had placed that within his grasp. And when he picked it up and started flailing away, it didn't shatter, it didn't break. It held up as good as any weapon, in fact, better than any of their weapons. And he defeated 1,000 of his enemies. When Moses was faced with the whole might of the most powerful nation in the world, the Egyptian army, he defeated them with a stick. He raised his stick, and at the command of that simple, ordinary stick, the waters of the Red Sea opened. They walked through, and then they closed on the entire Egyptian army. In our own culture, in the Mahabharata, there's the story of the Akshayapatra. Akshayapatra was a pot that was given to the Pandavas, which would feed any number of people once a day. The Pandavas were in exile in the forest due to the conspiracy of Duryodhan. They were in the forest for 13 years. And as they were leaving, the sun god gave the Pandavas' wife, Draupadi, this pot. It would feed any number of people until she ate. She would feed everyone, and then she would be the last one to eat. Once she ate, the pot would not give any more food for another 24 hours. Duryodhan, wanting to eliminate his enemies altogether, conspired with a great sage named Durvasa. Durvasa is a part of Lord Shiva, Rudra, which represents anger. Duryodhan sent Durvasa Muni with all of his 10,000 disciples and coached him to arrive at the campsite of the Pandavas after they've taken their meal. Now, it's our culture when someone arrives, even if it's unannounced, you offer them a meal. So Duryodhan was figuring that when 10,000 people arrived, and it was after Draupadi had eaten, so the pot would be of no use, they would be unable to show Durvasa, this very irascible sage, and his 10,000 disciples the proper hospitality, and then Durvasa would curse them with some major affliction. So everything went as planned. Draupadi fed everyone. She took her her meal, and then Nirvasa arrived with 10,000 disciples. Yudhisthira, all he could think of to do was to stall for time. So he said, please go to the river and take a bath and then come back and take your lunch. Meantime, Draupadi is like, she's in acute distress. She says, Krishna, another cliffhanger, please come and save us. If you have so many times before, Krishna appeared before her. And he said, what's the problem? He knew what the problem was because he's in the heart of every living being. She said, I have to feed 10,000 people. I need a stove. I need cooking materials. I need oil. I need produce. I need people to help me cut up the vegetables. And I need it all within 10 minutes. Krishna says, actually, you don't need any of that. She says, yes, you do. That's what you need to do to feed people. Krishna says, do you have the pot? I have the pot, but it's ordinary now. It was extraordinary half an hour ago. Now it's ordinary for another 24 hours. It's not going to help. Bring me the pot. Here's the pot. Is there any morsel of food in the pot that you might have overlooked? Well, Draupadi is thinking, well, yeah, there might be, but, you know, that's not going to feed 10,000 people. Krishna says, look, she found a little piece of spinach, sock. Krishna said, give it to me. Now, Draupadi was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. And when she handed the Lord of the universe, the creator of millions and millions and millions of universes, the root, the cause of all causes, when she handed him a little bit of spinach and he took it on his tongue and he swallowed it, he was completely satisfied. He was completely satisfied. Imagine that. The all-powerful Supreme Lord is satisfied by a little pinch of spinach. You would think it would take a whole convoy of dump trucks full of food to satisfy such a great, powerful, expansive personality. But actually, nothing material satisfies him. He needs nothing material. He doesn't have to eat food in order to keep his strength up. What he craves is the love and the devotion and the intelligence of those who offer his items of his own creation back to him. All it took was that piece of spinach. And when he swallowed it, he was satisfied having received it from his pure devotee. And it said, example is given, that when you water the root of the tree, then all the flowers, branches, leaves, and twigs are automatically nourished. So as soon as Krishna became satisfied, the 10,000 disciples of Devasa and Muni, who just a moment before had been ravenously hungry, all of a sudden it was like, it's the post-Thanksgiving dinner feeling. You know what that's like? Oh my gosh. They felt so stuffed up to the neck that they were embarrassed to go back to the campsite thinking that Yudhisthira would offer them something and they would not be able to eat even a morsel, and in this way they would insult him. So they just tiptoed away. In this way, Krishna took something which was very ordinary and he showed us that we don't have to have whistles and bells and grandstands and bugles in order to please him. He's pleased by a simple act of love and devotion. In the 9th chapter, 27th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Patra, he tells us the way to his heart. He reveals the way to his heart. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktapada. Offer me in love and devotion a flower, fruit, leaf, or water, and I will accept it. Such a simple thing. Now, if you can satisfy so simply and so easily, all we have to do is muster up a little devotion, a little intelligence to give back to the Supreme, a token of what he's given us. If we can satisfy the Lord of the universe, correct me if I'm wrong, but is there something more important? Is there something more outstanding? Is there anything more superlative that we can achieve in life? Just offer him a flower, fruit, leaf, and water with love and devotion, and you've reached the perfection of the human form of life. What more do we need? Prabhupada says here, the Supreme Lord is Purnam, perfect and complete in himself. He requires nothing for his satisfaction, but the Lord happily accepts even a small gift of flowers, leaves, and water when it has been offered in love. It doesn't take as much as you think to please the Lord and make our lives successful. We want to be happy, but the problem is that we're not complete units in and of ourselves. We are incomplete. God is the whole and we're the part. Our problem is we're trying to be complete by aligning ourselves with family and friends and country, and that's all well and good, but they're also incomplete. So when incompletes ally themselves, it doesn't make a complete. Only when the parts serve the whole does completeness take place. So in this way, if we link with Krishna through what we call bhakti yoga or lagan devotion, we become complete in a constitutional sense. Modern society has kind of missed it. It's almost an analogy for what we're talking about. It's said here in a Back to Godhead article, why waste our energy struggling in the tangled web of industry and international trade when we can get all our needs close at hand, saving time for spiritual advancement? Here's a picture that Gonzo took of the temple, but it's got the garden in front of the temple. Everything is at hand. If you have an acre of land, a cow, you can feed your family, you can be out in the fields, tilling, planting, weeding, harvesting, cutting up, cooking, eating together with your family, your friends, and there's nothing that yields more happiness than that. It's all we need. Plain living, high thinking. Why do we skip over all that for technology? And we stereotype the agriculturalists by thinking of them as backward or uncultured or hicks. Everything is at hand. Ordinary things are actually enabled to give us an extraordinary result. Prabhupada says, in this world, we're always trying to adjust. We're trying to adjust. Adjust this and that. Peace in the Middle East. The oil shortage. The typhoons and the earthquakes. We're always trying to adjust things. There's no need for adjustment because God is full. He's Purnam. And everything that comes from Him is full. That means each and every planet is fully equipped as a complete whole. That means each and every one of us is full. It doesn't mean we're full in the sense that God is full, but it means that when we link to the complete whole, we become full and complete. And all we need to do in order to achieve that is offer Him, in love and devotion, flower, fruit, leaf, or water. I heard this story. It's called All for the Good. In 1809, Simon Braille, who was a harness maker in Paris, and his wife Monique had a son named Louis. When Louis was just a little toddler, he slipped into the workshop of his father and he was experimenting and playing with the various tools. He picked up an awl, which is a very sharp tool made for punching holes in thick leather. And as he was fiddling with it, he slipped and fell and he blinded himself in one eye. He couldn't keep... As the eye got infected, he couldn't keep from rubbing this eye and then rubbing the other eye. The second eye got infected. By the age of 4, he was totally blind. Louis Braille got entry into the Royal School for the Blind, where he showed a talent for music as an organist. He very strongly wanted to create a language for blind people so that they could work on mathematical problems, they could read literature, and they could also read music. So he's back, many years later, he's back in that same workshop, sifting through those same tools. And of all the tools, imagine, that he deemed most appropriate for the task, he picked the awl. The very awl that had caused him to blind, that awl was also blessed by God as the instrument by which he could make his mark in history. All for the good. The question is, do I recognize what we have? There's a lot of exiles in our literature. Another exile was Ram, who was exiled for 13 years into the forest. While he was in the forest, now he came from a great kingdom. Great kingdom with rulers and soldiers and weaponry and sophistication. But on the eve of his coronation, he was exiled to the forest for 13 years. So he was disenfranchised, he was far away, and his wife got kidnapped by the greatest tyrant that the world has ever known. His name was Ravana. And he was so powerful that he had an entire city built of gold in Lanka, 800 miles off the coast of India. So what's Ram to do? He's a hermit in the forest. His wife has been stolen by the most powerful tyrant in the history of the world, and he's living in the forest. What is he to do? He's going to do what we're advised to do. Look around. See what's commonly available in the forest. What do you think? What's pretty common in the forest? Huh? Monkeys. Monkeys are common in the forest. So Ram, He made friends with the monkeys, Sugriva and Hanuman, and then they crossed the ocean, and the monkeys, they attacked this sophisticated army. They had nuclear weapons in those days. They had missiles. They had guns. They had a city that was the strongest, most fortified city. They'd beaten the demigods in battle. How are monkeys going to contend with this huge, never-before-defeated army? They're going to be empowered by God. Ordinary monkeys are going to be anointed and empowered by God. And they're going against all this sophisticated weaponry with what else that's right at hand for them? Rocks and tree branches, stones. And yet, when they attack the city with these primitive weapons, they were able to overcome Ravana's whole army, destroy it, take the city, kill Ravana, and retrieve Ram's wife, Sita. But when our time is up, is it going to be said of us that we just took up space, we just breathed oxygen, we lived and died, and no one even knew that we were here? Or is it going to be said, he or she was a giant killer? He or she took new ground for the kingdom. He or she left a legacy of faith. Are we looking around at what's at our disposal, what's close to us, the solution, the breakthrough, the new business? There's something in your life right now that can cause you to make your mark in history, to make your mark in your generation. We're not supposed to just come and go and not have left a legacy for the benefit of other people. If you're a Krishna devotee and we take inventory of what we have close at hand, what we have that's completely sufficient to get us where we need to go, and if we recognize this and appreciate it, we don't have to go outside of this circle. We have three things that set us aside in our Vaishnava Krishna Bhakti devotional tradition. One of them is the deity worship, as you see in this picture. It may be a knee-jerk reflex reaction coming from a Western culture to see the deities, to think of them as idols or statues or symbolic. None of that is true. The deity worship is a system called Archa Vigraha. It's thousands and thousands of years old. And the deities being carved according to the descriptions of the scriptures and the visions of great saints and sages are installed with certain covenants and certain purificatory rituals and certain mantras. The deities differ from other statues or other dolls or whatever in as much as they are authorized. They are authorized. If you're a teenager, and most of us were teenagers, and some of us still are, and you're out with your buddies, and you're determined to do some mischief in the community, there's one thing I would advise you not to do. And that is, go past the mailboxes, the blue and orange mailboxes that have PMG written on them, put cherry bombs in them, or hit them with baseball bats. Cherry bomb anything else, destroy anything else. But I would most strongly advise you, don't go near those boxes which are authorized by the government. And you may say, well, they're just boxes like so many other boxes. These boxes are not like so many. They may look like other boxes. They may be made of the same material as other boxes. But these boxes carry the full weight of the federal government of the United States of America. And if you vandalize them, that's not a misdemeanor. That's not a municipal offense. That's not a local offense. That's a federal offense. Because those boxes are authorized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So according to the covenants that are made at the time the deity is installed, God Himself personally comes in order to stand in that deity form and accept our service. Not symbolical, not allegorical. Actually, the Lord is there, personally standing in order to accept our service. And our service gets to where it needs to go through the principle of deity worship. Second thing that we have close at hand, it's not ordinary, and as soon as we take it as ordinary, we begin to go far afield for some other means of satisfaction, is the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Another quote from Back to Godhead. God is perfect and complete, and so is everything in relation to Him, including His holy name. Perfect and complete means that all the qualities we attribute to God are also found in His divine names. When you chant any bona fide name of God, whether it's Krishna, Allah, Govinda, Emmanuel, God is personally present. Being absolute, there's no difference between He and His name. If you want some biblical quotes, whenever two or three are gathered together, there I am. Our Father art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. As soon as I know your name, that's the beginning of a personal relationship with you. We don't have any experience. I won't say your names, but these two ladies have been traveling together, okay? Now, let's say they've been traveling together for some time, going from farm to farm and farm and farm. They've had a lot of adventures, a lot of experience, hot springs and meeting other people and so on and so forth. And I were to ask Jen, what's the name of your friend? She wouldn't say, oh, I don't know her name. We've been together for like 6 months or so, but I haven't got to that part yet. I don't know her name. No! That's the first thing. You wouldn't have had a personal relationship unless almost the first thing that happened was you had a name. And if you don't know your names, you don't have a personal relationship. So God gives His names, not just God, you know, some big position or some big official up there. He gives His name so that we can enjoy a personal relationship with Him. So He makes His name available to human society so that we can have Him dancing on the tip of our tongue. It's as simple as chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. It may not seem like much. What's in a name? But actually, although it appears ordinary and things may come against you, big giants, financial problems, sickness, the name is especially in power. It has all the powers of the Lord. So with the name of the Lord on your lips, you can kill giants. Our example is Namacharya Haridas Thakur. When we bow down at the end of the ceremony, you'll hear the Prima Dhani prayers. And one part of that is Srila Namacharya Haridas Thakur Kijai. Haridas Thakur lived 500 years ago during the time of Lord Chaitanya. And he chanted 300,000 names of God per day. And he was born a Muslim, and the Muslims were very envious and unhappy. They thought that he'd become a Hindu, and what if other Muslims follow his example? All of society will come apart at the seams. So we've got to discredit this man. And what they did was they found the most beautiful, alluring prostitute within 500 miles. And they sent her to him as he was chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, Napoleon, all that had to happen to Napoleon was Josephine went, hello there. And this world conqueror, this marshal of enemies of hundreds of thousands, he's down, hello there, like that. You know, Mark Antony, Cleopatra, hello there, like that. Okay, so great world heroes have been conquered just by the glance of a woman. But after 3 days of trying to seduce Haridas Thakur, this most beautiful, like think Miss Universe, not only did she not fail to separate him from his practice of chanting the holy names, but he was so empowered that when he left that place after 3 days, she became a devotee of Krishna. She gave up all her jewelry, all her trappings, she gave her wealth. She accepted a simple cloth, and in his place, she sat down and chanted, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, what faces us? What challenges are before us? If we realize that these simple, ordinary things, like the deity and the holy name of the Lord, they have the power of the Lord contained within them, we'll walk with confidence, we'll have a spring in our step, we'll throw our shoulders back, and we'll think of ourselves as being fully equipped by the Lord of the universe to fulfill our destiny. You've heard me refer to Srila Prabhupada. He's the founder of Acharya, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And just as Krishna is perfect and complete, those who are perfectly and completely attached to Krishna, they're also perfectly and complete. This is the definition of the guru. And I'll just read you a couple of passages here where Prabhupada's disciples were writing about him. Everything about you, Srila Prabhupada, is perfect and complete. Everything about your appearance is beautiful and elegant. Everything about your speech is supreme truth and is soothing to the heart aching due to forgetfulness of Krishna. Everything about your glance is compassionate and merciful to the fallen, conditioned souls. Everything you do is very thoughtful and perfect. Everything you suggest becomes truth and reality. Everything you touch becomes sacred and wonderful. Everything you say is the perfection of words and meaning. Everything you write is revealing truth and pure love of Krishna. Everything you think is of saving the fallen souls and of Krishna's lotus feet. Everything about your instructions is eternal and inspiring to take up. Everything about your teachings is Krishna's, and you make them easy to accept. Everything about your lectures is vibrant and ecstatic truth and magnetic to all conditioned souls. Everything about your smile is the understanding of bliss and the soul's contentment. These three things, the Guru, the holy name, and the deity form. It says that if one thinks of the deity as stone, the Guru as an ordinary man, or the holy name as a mundane sound vibration, one has nada kaya buddhi. One has hellish intelligence. How does that work out? Let's say a man, young man, starts off in the bloom of youth looking for treasure to make his fortune. He goes everywhere in the world that there's rumored to be gold or silver or jewels or some fortune to make. He spends his whole life in the fruitless pursuit of wealth, only to come back to his home as an old broken man and find that all along there was a huge treasure in his backyard. It was all that long. It was right under his feet all the time. So, I heard a story about a fellow. He had a scrap metal, a junkyard with scrap metal. And at one point, he was able to pick up a whole bunch of German motorcycle batteries for about 2 cents a pound. So out of the 20 acres of scrap metal, there's about 2 acres just piled high, 10, 12 feet high with batteries. Now, he and his family, they wanted to do some good somewhere in the world. They wanted to do hospitals, schools in Africa and Asia. But they just didn't have the resources in order to accomplish their dreams. And even though they seemed to come up short in terms of what they needed, the dream wouldn't go away. It was persistent. It kept nagging and nagging and nagging at them. And one day, while he was sleeping, a voice came to him in the middle of the night and said, "Batteries. Batteries." He said, "I bought them for 2 cents a pound. What is it? But just out of curiosity, he took the battery to an expert, you know, battery inspector. He said, "Check it out, you know." The guy looked at it. He said, "This is just an ordinary German motorcycle battery. There's nothing to it. No value whatsoever. Probably not even worth the 2 cents a pound you paid for it." But it still wouldn't go away. He kept thinking about the batteries, One day, he decided to do a Google search. German motorcycle batteries, World War II. So came up 4,000 or 5,000 hits, you know, 25 pages, all the same old, same old, same old, one page, two page. I'm sure you've had that experience after the fifth or sixth page, you're getting a headache and you're starting to get cross-eyed and you're ready to toss it in. So he got to about the 12th page, same old, same old. He said, "I'll just do one more page." On the 13th page, he ran across an article that said at one point during World War II, the Germans were experimenting that instead of putting lead inside of a certain number of batteries, they put silver inside the batteries to see if they wouldn't help the batteries work better under extreme cold. So he went back to that expert and he said, "Could you look a little closer at this battery? Could you open it up and see what's inside?" And sure enough, he had 2 acres of batteries filled with silver. And with the income that he realized from selling those batteries, he was able to establish hospitals and schools in the places that he had aspired to do it. So you also have the things that you need to make your mark right at hand. You may say, "Well, I don't really know anybody. I don't really have the right connections." You do have friends in high places. God is your friend. So quit telling yourself you don't have the right connections, you don't know the right people. You don't, but Krishna does. You don't know what it is that God's put into your path. One phone call, one connection, you go from dreaming the dream to living the dream. Not in the far off, distant, sweet by and by. Right now, there are opportunities in your path. Right now, there are things in your within reach that seem ordinary, but are not so. Krishna has deposited all of us with gifts and talents and resources, and they may not seem like much, but when you open them up, you're going to discover that Krishna has given you whatever you need. It's not lead, it's silver. He can thrust you to a whole new level. It only takes a little bit of God's favor, it only takes a glance to catapult you, to thrust you to a higher level than you ever thought possible. We're trying to light a fire on the inside today, discourage us from saying, "This problem is too big, this sickness is too chronic, this legal situation is too complicated." Whatever you're facing, it's not bigger than the power of God. Don't get discouraged. Krishna is saying that if you'll use what you have, I will multiply your talent. I will multiply your resources. I will multiply your influence. Now is not the time to make excuses. Now is not the time to let people talk you out of it. Now is not the time to settle for mediocrity. It's time to rise up, look around, see what you have. Let's be people who realize that we have the Creator of the universe breathing in our direction and who recognize what we have. Krishna can multiply your strength, he can multiply your talent, he can multiply your influence. Sure, life may have and may in the future also give you some bad breaks. Well, you have a choice. You can sit around and complain, let those bad breaks defeat you, or you can rise up and say, wait a minute, I'm the child of the Most High God. I've got a destiny to fulfill. Those who are for me are much greater than those who are against me. I'm not going to sit around complaining and fretting about what I don't have. I'm going to start marching towards my destiny. I'm going to start multiplying what I have. And if God be with me, who dare be against me? And sure, there'll be detractors. There'll be people who say that it's not a good idea, it won't work, you don't have enough people behind you. There are people who will not see what you see, because your dream is your dream, and God will speak to you about your dream more than He'll speak to anybody else. He'll give you your dream, not full-blown, but He'll give you in a seed form. If you want an oak tree, God's not going to give you a big oak tree. He's going to give you the seed, and then it's up to us to nourish it and grow it into a big oak tree. So Krishna's already lined up the people in your future. He's already opened the doors. He's already made the right connections. Let's just do our part and look around and see what God has already placed in our path for the fulfillment of our destiny. Don't think it's way off in the future. One day I'll get a good break. One day God will rain manna from heaven. One day I'll meet the right people. Right people are in your life right now. The opportunity for promotion is close to you. The solution that you're looking for is within your reach. In our culture, we have this idea of a desire tree. It's called a kalpa vriksha. In the spiritual world, there are trees, which are spiritual trees, and they can give you anything you want. Unlike the trees in this material world, pear tree can only give you pears, apple can only give you apples, mango can only give you mangoes. The desire trees in the spiritual world can give you anything you want as long as it's engaged in the service of the Lord. So whatever you need, that's already at hand. And if it seems to be inadequate to the task, the Lord is the great I Am. He's the great multiplier. He created from nothing, from darkness, millions and millions and millions of universes. So He can take what you have and He can expand it. He can expand your peace. He can expand your restoration. He can expand your breakthroughs. He can expand your increase. He can expand your victory. So in conclusion, our challenge is to look around at what we have. What we need is close to us. Don't write it off just because it's ordinary. Things are there because before we were born, God wrote the plan for our life and He put all the elements in place for us to fulfill our destiny. All we have to do is recognize them. If we do so, we will defeat giants. We will overcome obstacles that were insurmountable. We will accomplish dreams that we thought were impossible. And if you wish to say with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama.